This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, feed the linguistic ducks. It's June, the President of the United States has officially designated it LGBT Pride Month, and there'll be Pride events around the world. So in today's show, we'll discover how the word Pride came to be the banner word for demonstrations and celebrations of LGBT rights and culture. To warm up, here's some word history. One of the reasons I like words so much is that they are full of surprises. For instance, I thought it was pretty well known that the term lesbian alludes to the Greek island of Lesbos, home to the poet Sappho, who was famous for her poems about love between women. Lesbian was first used to describe same-sex relationships in the late 19th century, but what I didn't know is that prior to then, it had quite a different life. From around the year 1590, a lesbian rule was the name of a tool used by stonemasons, a stick made of a kind of lead found on the Isle of Lesbos that was flexible so that it could be used to measure or be moulded to irregular shapes. And you can follow the lesbian rule back to the 4th century BC, when the Greek philosopher Aristotle used it as a simile for how the legal system had to be flexible and respond to the particulars of each case. He wrote, "When the thing is indefinite, the rule also is indefinite. Like the leaden rule used in making the lesbian moulding, the rule adapts itself to the shape of the stone and is not rigid, and so too the decree is adapted to the facts." So from a flexible metal stick to women who love women, the word lesbian has had quite a journey. As has pride. The Old English word meant bravery or pomp with a touch of conceit. Skip over 1,000 years in the Atlantic Ocean to New York City in 1970. Homosexuality was still classified as a mental illness. Gay sex was punishable with fines and prison sentences. A police raid on the Stonewall Inn on Christopher Street on the 28th of June 1969 sparked the Stonewall riots, after which, for the gay civil rights movement, pride began to mean something more.
My name is Craig Schoonmaker, and in 1970 offered the term gay pride, as it has been used since then. I mean, somebody had to come up with it. The way it happened is that we had a committee, the Christopher Street Liberation Day Committee, that was forming the first annual gay march to celebrate the Stonewall riots the prior year. And I was on the committee. We were going to create a number of events the same weekend as the march to bring people in from out of town, and wanted to unify the weekend of events under a single label. And the first thought was apparently Gay Power Weekend. I did not like that. I proposed Gay Pride because there's very little chance in most of the world for people to have power. Gay people did not have power then, and we only now have some. So anybody could have pride in themselves, and that would make them more happier as people and produce a movement that would likely produce change.
But the word pride carries negative connotations too, of conceit or vanity. Pride is one of the seven deadly sins.
Oh no, this is not that kind of pridefulness. It's more like self-esteem. But that was sort of hackneyed even then. The poison was shame, and the antidote to that is pride. And I understood that, and the committee understood apparently also, because there was no discussion, they immediately voted to make it Gay Pride Weekend.
There were events with names like Gay Liberation and Gay Freedom, or named after Christopher Street, but over the years most of them have adopted the name Pride.
It's always better to have a standard rubric that everybody recognizes. Pride is just shorthand for gay pride, and it didn't start out that way. Just remember that a lot of people were very repressed. They were conflicted internally and didn't really know to come out and be proud. So that's how the word gay pride proved most useful, because it made people think, maybe I should be proud.
What kind of environment was it then for gay people to be living in?
Plainly, the Stonewall riots resulted from police invasion of a gay bar and a form of oppression. I was, for instance, arrested in August of 1968 while talking to a friend on Christopher Street and refusing to break it up and move on. which was a standard language, because we were not loud, and it was abusive. So I spent the night in jail and went to Mattachine Society, which was the only organization for gay people at that time. And they mentioned it in the newsletter. But around that same time, Mayor Lindsay made a basic change in police instructions and had them stop harassing gay people. So it was a fortunate confluence of events. Mayor Lindsay had already made changes in police policy. So the police were either not noticeable or were actually standing by to protect marchers if any trouble developed. And that was a nice change. But the laws didn't change for a long time. And we were constantly pushing. They would do things like invade the offices of a hostile magazine just to make sure they knew that we were watching and we're not going to put up with slander. So that was good. And they would also demonstrate outside the offices of hostile legislators, things like that. But it took a while, even with this kind of confrontation, to get things done. Meanwhile, there were publishing organizations like mine, Homosexuals and Transgen, and we continued to work on the intellectual underpinnings of the movement, and we tried to bring people to terms with their sexuality. We were always influenced in the United States by the Black Civil Rights Movement, which preceded us, but not by that much. Black Civil Rights Movement, as I say, was a pathfinder. It showed us how to proceed in a nonviolent fashion. And when we organized the march, first march, we had Quakers as trainers on what to do and what to avoid doing when we held our march. We were not supposed to wander out of the, I think it was in one or two lanes of the Avenue of the Americas, which is called 6th Avenue in the original street grid. And we were by no means to be aggressive toward the police, disrespectful in any way, and certainly not violent in any way. And it turned out to be a very orderly march. People did not violate any of the terms, and we were not interfered with by the police. It wasn't very large in terms of the number of people. It might have been as many as 3,000 to 5,000 in the street and people on the sidewalk. It had not yet caught on because it had never happened before. And we were chanting. I'm trying to remember what the words of the chants might have been. Things like gay is good. Say it loud, I'm gay and I'm proud, things like that. It was quite festive. It was in the summertime because that's when the Stonewall riots occurred, and the weather was nice. It wasn't rainy or anything bad. So it was actually festive, and it went up to Central Park. And then we were joined by more people in the park, and somebody I overheard was looking out over the group, which was probably at that point maybe 10,000, and said, "Just think, there's somebody out there for every one of us in that crowd," which was a nice thing. People were able to acknowledge themselves and be open in public, which is something you didn't see before. Most of it, of the gay life, was at night in bars and clubs. And in Greenwich Village, you would have people walking around on the Sundays especially, but not generally outside the gay Mecca of the West Village.
That same weekend, Los Angeles and San Francisco held their own marches, and within a couple of years, gay rights marches were happening in cities across the US. And in the 45 years since, Pride events have been taking place in hundreds of cities around the world.
do you still think the word pride is necessary for gay people?
Definitely. Absolutely. See, because it works, I don't want to say insidiously, it works internally, and it makes people more self-assertive. And that's what really is going to make the change in people's lives. When they assert the right to marry, when they assert the right to be known, when they assert their rights to employment under the various state and local laws and regulations. So there's a lot of work to be done in the world at large. But the more that people are open and self-assertive in the first world, the more easy it is for people in the third world to see that they have a possibility of change too.
Would you have anticipated that pride would be not only still the term now, but it'd be all over the world and there'd be a whole month devoted to it?
No, I don't think so. I'm very happy it did, but we didn't anticipate that. Well, we hoped it would be in the United States for sure, because there were other marches. That year they also had one in Los Angeles and one in San Francisco. And we certainly hoped that it would catch on. Not as a slogan so much as an understanding that people should be proud and not ashamed.
How do you feel about Pride marches starting off political and now a lot of them have evolved into parties and parades?
I'm pretty happy about that because many of the goals have been achieved. And why not celebrate? Rarely, if ever, has any social movement come so far in so short a time.
Craig Schoonmaker runs the Mr. Gay Pride website and blog, as well as the Newark, New Jersey Photo Journal. And nowadays, he's also a linguistic campaigner in favour of phonetic spellings of English words. I've linked to his websites at theillusionist.org/pride. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, and Eleanor McDowell from Falling Tree Productions, with help from Peregrine Andrews. The music's by Martin Austwick. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is congeries. Noun, a disorderly collection. That's good, now I can use a classy sounding word like congeries rather than saying my home is covered in piles of crap. You disorderly collection of listeners can find me at Twitter and Facebook / Allusionist Show and at theallusionist.org.